This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers. I'm Madeleine Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, The Holly and the Ivy, The Root of the Carol.
And before we start off this week, can we just say a very Merry Christmas to those celebrating, Happy Holidays, and joyous Yuletide to you all.
Yes,
that's right. It's our Christmas episode.
Hooray! Yeah, it'll be airing slightly before Christmas, so more around the time just before the winter solstice. So,
yeah. It's our solstice episode! So this year we thought that we might talk about carols.
Yes.
And basically in our traditional, as is our traditional way, we are going to basically prove that everything is pagan.
And about sex.
And about sex. Sex and paganism. Sex, death, and paganism. There we go.
Yes.
Throw in some fairies and that's dissecting dragons for you.
Well, there's folklore and we do talk about books. But yeah, you're basically right. So maybe we should change the title. Anyway, that aside, a brief history of the carol. It's obviously been traditional to sing during the winter festival, believe it or not, since right back, presumably to Celtic times over here, and possibly even before that, there was a Roman tradition of singing around sort of the winter time to partly, presumably, as entertainment because it was boring. but also, I think there was a tradition to, you're supposed to be frightening off the evil spirits of winter, the ones that came, the midwinter death that came and took you're very old and you're very young and you're sick.
Mm.
And your animals and blighted the land, etc. But you're also singing so that the sun would come back. So it's all tied into that sense of renewal, something that goes so deep that even now with, shall we say, more Abrahamic religions overlaying the top, that it still creeps through and themes from the original pagan roots still come through, even in Christmas songs, which are which might have been written by staid Victorian gentlemen who didn't realise that the imagery they were using was extremely pagan.
Yeah. I mean, I love this time of year, and I really do love the traditions, but they do make a lot of sense. That's the thing, is that you have to remind yourself that all of these kind of little traditions are based in, there's an element of logic to them as well. And as you say, there's a reason we have such a strong association with stories and songs at Christmas. And it is because this, you know, it was a boring time of year. Everyone's hauled up inside all together. You know, you can't really do much. It's not like you can work the land. I mean, there's plenty of hard work to be done, but there would be very long hours of the day where you couldn't do anything because it was dark. And that was that. Or you might be snowed in. And so, of course, in order to kind of basically keep everyone sane, you would tell stories and sing songs, forms of entertainment. And also, because it's such a dark time of year, that will affect people's moods, as well as, you know, the strong association with death, which is that, you know, winter comes round, people die around winter. I mean, people die all the time, but, you know, especially in the times before central heating, when it got super cold, and sickness, you know, came in and things like that, there was, winter was a time of death. So, of course, if you're going to, you know, survive as a society and as a group of people, you've got to kind of find joy somewhere to balance it out. Otherwise, you're all just going to be totally miserable. So it makes sense that of the two things, you have scary stories, which is because there's a difference between misery and being scared. I mean, being scared can actually kind of induce a thrill instead.
Yep.
So there's scary stories, and then there's very happy stories. And the happy stories usually come in the form of singing. So I just think it's great. And it just goes to show, like, people are all merry around Christmas. You know, that might also be because of the presents and stuff like that. But there's a strong association of joy and joyfulness around Christmas, which ties into the whole giving thing, which must have pre-existed. But around January and February and early February, I tell you what, we are miserable.
Well, February slightly less because you're starting to get a few of the spring flowers through.
Yeah, you're starting to get the spring flowers, and then you've got Valentine's Day coming in, and
yes.
Lupercalia, and
yes. But as we were saying, everything pretty much comes back to sex, and mm-hmm. which makes sense over the winter because you're thinking, as a a pre-Christian Celtic person or someone even further dating further back than that. You were thinking about the renewal of the earth and hoping the sun would come back, ideally, that everything would get warm again and that there'd be new animals for you to hunt and new crops for you to gather, etc., etc., and that you'd all weather the winter okay. So as Madeline said, yes, you'd sing, you'd entertain each other, you'd have a winter festival because that helps break up the long period of darkness and cold. And
gives people something to look forward to.
Yes, so carols really do have their roots in very pagan beginnings, and obviously this did not sit well with Oliver Cromwell, because during the Commonwealth, which dated 1649 to 1653, he actually banned carol singing and Christmas itself, but especially carol singing, and you could actually be imprisoned or even executed for celebrating Christmas.
Yeah, and Oliver no fun allowed Cromwell.
One of the things he most disliked about carol singing and Christmas was, giving yourself up to dissipation, and with dissipation, even between husband and wife, was the excessive amounts of sex. And a lot of the carols are actually about sex, believe it or not. So if we look at one of the most famous ones, Madeline's mentioned this one on a previous episode, as the 12 Days of Christmas.
Yes.
In Christian tradition, the 12 days of Christmas start on the 25th of December and run right up to the point where the Magi were supposed to have found Jesus Christ. So that's 12 days in theory. Actually, it was more like 5 years, but for the sake of continuity, they shortened it to 12 days.
Can you imagine having 5 years of just, oh God, come on.
The 5 years of Christmas. Yeah, there would not be enough verses in that song.
5 years of Christmas. Instead of celebrating it every year, you celebrate it. It's kind of like a leap year every year.
Gotcha.
And this is the anniversary of the Magi finally arriving.
What took you so long? Well, we had to travel thousands and thousands of miles, and there were no cars and planes back then. It was all by camel.
Also, we were following a star. Do you know how difficult it is to follow a single star?
Oh, yeah, we could do a total riff off that. That would be really funny. But let's try and stay on target.
Sorry.
So the 12 days of Christmas... everyone must have heard it, there's the partridge in the pear tree, there's two turtle doves, etc., etc. And the idea is that the person is sort of bragging about all these wonderful gifts their lover is giving to them. There's actually two meanings behind this. One of them dates back to sort of Oliver Cromwell and has been sort of adapted, shall we say, lyric-wise, since then. Because the 12 days of Christmas were a time when everybody had the time off. It was a holiday. You had 12 guaranteed days off, and what did people do with their 12 days off when they weren't working 16 hour days? They did quite a lot of drinking and eating and shagging.
Yes.
And the song in its original fragmentary form, which we don't really have anymore, reflects this. Now, 100 years later, when the lyrics had been tidied up a little bit, it was sung as a roundel game whereby one person would start the song, the next person had to remember what the next gift was, and if they didn't, they had to give the first person a kiss in recompense for this. So this was quite saucy for the early 18th century. This was not a nice parlour game.
Well, it depends. Oscar Wilde would be all over this. Now, sorry.
Well, yes, 150 years after that.
After that, yeah, sorry, if he was around. Can I just ask as well, the 12 Days of Christmas, Was that also not used by Catholics as a form of a code way of doing
the mass?
Mass, yeah.
Yeah, during the Commonwealth, as yeah. I said with Oliver Cromwell. I mean, yeah. the big celebrations, the big festivals and things usually came from the Catholic Church and really became part of the canon. As in, you were not really worshipping your God correctly if you were not doing the actual celebrating side of things as well.
Yeah.
And obviously the Anglican Church took on some of it, but pared back on the iconography, for example.
Yeah.
And then Oliver Cromwell came along and was like, no, you can't have any of that.
Can't have any of that. You know, it's just because I just wanted to lay it out straight in that it was Cromwell was basically, he banned the songs, also probably because, yeah, they had the pagan imagery in them as well, but it was more to do with the connection with Catholicism, wasn't it?
Yeah, he disliked that as well. But then, in his opinion, Catholics were little better than pagans.
Yeah, true.
He was all kinds of fun, that guy. I mean, there's the whole no cake, no wedding rings.
Yeah, and let's massacre a bunch of Irish people do.
Yep, that as well.
No fun. Anyway, let's go forward a few,
maybe 100
years or so, back to 12 days of Christmas and kissing your partner.
Yeah, well, not necessarily your partner, could be anybody.
Anybody.
Because once you, if you get the verse right, the person you sing it to has to sing the next verse, and if they've got it wrong. So basically, if you're the person who gets stuck on like verse 7, then you're kind of scuppered and you've got to kiss everybody in the line ahead of you.
But imagine being a saucy minx and getting it wrong on purpose.
Well, I can tell you are.
No, I assure you that's not my game. But there would be some gross old dude who'd be like, oh, I've forgotten the words. Kiss everybody.
Yeah, I mean, largely we'd consider that quite harmless now, and I'm sure there were times when that was considered quite harmless, but back when it really, you did not touch somebody of the opposite sex. Unless, you know, that you were related to them. And even then, you didn't do it in public. So it was quite risque back then. So, as we said, it probably the 12 days of Christmas, that it was a traditional period before the Catholics took it over for people to rest and celebrate the midwinter and tell stories and sing songs, etc. Then it became the 12 days of Christmas from Christmas to Epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
5 years of Christmas, as maybe. The Catholics took it on. Then Oliver Cromwell banned it completely, and then it became basically a drinking game with lots of snogging. So everything sort of, you know how fashions come round, and everyone's like, "Oh, I wouldn't be seen dead in that." And then sort of 5 years down the line, or 10 years down the line, their children or their younger siblings are wearing it.
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same thing, except that with this, everything comes back to sex and drinking.
We go through small periods of extreme intolerance, and then everyone's back at it.
Yeah, what interested me looking into this, not just the 12 days of Christmas, but looking at some of the others, was the strange way, well, perhaps it wasn't strange, it was the way that certain Victorian musicians took popular tunes and changed the lyrics completely. And they didn't even change some of them very far. Let's look at Hark the Herald Angels Sing, which sounds about as Christian as you can possibly imagine, doesn't it?
Yes.
It started off being called Hark All the Welkin Rings.
Oh, okay.
To welkin ring means to dance in a traditional fertility dance.
Oh,
and make a lot of noise.
Fantastic.
It's kind of like, it's Christmas. Yes, we believe this Christ child was born. Let's celebrate it by drinking and doing fertility stuff. It's one of those weird overlaps.
I mean, to be honest, it makes sense. That's the whole point, is that yeah, this amazing child was born to save us. Let's have children. But yeah, you're right that I think probably just little history lesson there. Quick history lesson. You guys will probably know this, but just a reminder about what happened when Christianity kind of arrived in Britain and sort of the Celtic islands, I shall say. Then they're not islands, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
We were all pagan. I say pagan, it just means we weren't Christian. We were all something. We all had our own beliefs. You know, we'd been invaded a bunch of times, so we had all sorts of gods and different beliefs. And, you know, we had Woden and so forth. And basically the Christians arrived. And they came through the Romans. That's how Christianity arrived in Britain. And something you must remember about the Romans is that the Romans were so successful in their empire because they didn't just say, right, our way is the only way, you have to do everything our way. They actually took and incorporated a lot of things of the different cultures that they basically took over.
Yes.
They didn't try to convert everyone. They simply just went, right, you're Roman now, continue on as you are. And what basically happened was that a lot of people think that it was just, oh, God, we have to try and get them to worship our God. We'll just say, ah, this day is about our God now, but you can continue doing everything you want to do. It wasn't so much that, as much more of a gentle kind of, oh, you have that God as well, we'll celebrate it all together, if that makes sense. I think a lot of people think that it was all trickery, and I don't think, considering the history that we have, it really was trickery. I think it was just a gentle kind of union between the two things, because there was already a lot of, you know, a lot of overlap.
Yeah, and obviously the UK itself is a little bit different in how, because it was detached from mainland Europe, while Rome spread an awful lot of influence over the rest of Europe, when it finally got to the United Kingdom, or became the United Kingdom, we had already had a few early Christians come and settle here. So we already had a pre-existing base for what became the Church of the Celtic Rite, which caused problems round about 1,000 years later, what with the what with the Battle of Hastings and the Latin Church, what became the papacy, throwing their arm in behind William the Conqueror. because they didn't want a free, loving Christian type community who actually didn't bow down very much to Rome and decided they were going to run things their way and have women, men and women serving God equally and considered equal. That didn't suit them. But it was
big shock, big surprise.
Big surprise. So all that time there'd been a lot of jostling back and forth between the sort of the more Latin, Romanized Christianity that had come in and the pre-existing Church of the Celtic Rite, which was founded greatly on paganism but had embraced a lot of Christian ideals and, you know, had stopped things like the traditional sacrifice at winter, which we won't go into. So yeah, it is really interesting, but I think that's probably why so many of our carols and things have roots that, yeah, we might say, yes, this carol was first written in 1753, but actually its roots probably go back about 800 years earlier. It might be a completely different tune, but the concept behind it is extremely pagan, or the much, concept, much older.
Yeah, and I think also it's the imagery. The imagery is what really comes into it, and we have certain imagery. And that's also because it's what we see around us. You know, the association of holly and mistletoe, they happen to grow in winter when not a lot else grows. It's not really that, you know, far-fetched.
Yeah.
And, you know, having the Yule log and things like that, yeah, oddly enough, a time where it's freezing cold is a pretty good time to build a fire.
Yeah. Of course, the Yule log is a remnant of the fire festival side, the winter solstice.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. Okay, let's talk about the holly and the ivy, which, as you say, does have that imagery and potentially sounds like it could be quite Christian, particularly when you get onto the next lot of verses. But the initial verse, the holly and the ivy, when they are both grown of all the trees that are in the wood, the holly bears the crown. Well, the holly is representative of the male essence, and the ivy is the more gentle, pliant mm-hmm. female essence. This is all about the male and female coming together in the winter when it's dark and it's time to be fertile, basically.
I just have to pause that very quickly and just say, I love the idea of ivy being pliant. Like, have you ever seen ivy? It is so tenacious. It's like
you can't stop it. It pulls down walls, you know.
Yeah, like ivy does not mess around. Yeah, okay, so holly might be quite prickly, but you know.
Comparison.
Ivy can topple houses, so you know.
Yeah. And I'm sure that they had that in mind originally, sort of like, you might be physically weaker in some respects, but actually. So yeah, there's that, and that obviously feeds into the very pagan original story of the Year King, and the fact that winter is the time when the new king is traditionally born as well. So the sun god Sol Invictus, etc., and the son of God, better known as Jesus Christ, according to Christian mythology. So it's interesting.
There couldn't
how they
be made any overlap there, I wonder.
And it's almost like they kind of chose the feast day with that in mind, but perhaps that's a bit cynical.
Well, I mean, to be what's wrong if they did? There's no problem. There's nothing wrong, you know, if they say, all right, okay, let's choose this day. This day symbolically is the day, you know, of born kings. We don't have an exact date, so yeah, let's choose this day. What's wrong with that?
Nothing at all. Except for the whole, you know, repressing and smothering of an original religion and way of life. But, you know, aside from that, it's fine. And, yeah, we've all learned to share. And I think, well, we still have the Church of the Celtic Rite. Well, people were probably rubbing along as best they could. It was probably still quite reasonable, shall we say, between them. The hacking and burning came much later.
So,
the rising of the sun, well, there you go, the third line of that particular chorus, and the running of the deer. There is a very old pagan tradition of deer hunting, particularly in the summer when the king stag is at his height. If you could bring down the king stag, you could be crowned as king. And in the winter, when all the does were in foal, or calf, so you didn't hunt the does, you hunted the other stags. Traditionally, you didn't go for a mother animal while it was in calf. And again, so winter deer hunts, the deer would have been quite skinny and wouldn't have had much fat, but at that point in the winter, you might have been getting to the point where you really needed some fresh meat.
Yeah.
And once again, it became quite a symbolic thing. So, okay, in order to get through the winter so that you survive to see the rising of the sun, you'd go out and hunt yourself some deer. So again, this is really, really ancient imagery. And the following verses, you know, the holly bearing a blossom as white as milk, which I'm actually not sure is true. I'm pretty sure that's not true at all. bearing a canker as bitter as any gall. Again, that's deliberately layered in there to be similar to myrrh, which one of the three kings brought, symbolic of death and dying and being a risen god. The berry, red as blood, well, it's sacrifice. Again, same thing happens with the Year King, and obviously Jesus Christ. I was going to say the Christ child, but that sounds like I'm really on the outside and don't know what I'm talking about. I was actually brought up Catholic.
The Christ child.
The holly bears a prickle as sharp as any thorn. And again, you've got the crown of thorns. So there's all this layered imagery. A lot of it is very pagan. It always amuses
sounds
me.
Sounds super sexual, though.
It does. It is really, really. The entire song is literally about sex. Sex and death. So there you go. It's a lovely song. It's a beautiful tune. It sounds wonderful when you've got a full choir and full voice going. But yeah, it's about sex and death. A weird one. Do you know I saw three ships?
Yes, I do.
That's...
That one?
Yeah. That one, really, really cheerful and a bit sort of like, what have three ships got to do with Christmas?
Isn't it? I thought it was about the Magi.
No, not necessarily.
Oh. Okay.
This is going to be a bit off the wall.
All right, let's go.
I saw three ships, the original lyrics, as far as we can tell, which again are fragmentary, don't have anything about the Saviour Christ and his lady coming across. But it is a very British one, in the sense of the idea is that in the later lyrics that it's like feet. Did those feet in ancient time walk on England's pastures green? Where Jesus Christ was brought across the ocean as a little boy to be fostered amongst the Druids. Again, as I said, this is quite out there as theories go. But I saw three ships, the original lyrics, actually talks about three fair women. A young woman, an old woman, and a mother. I know, mind blown.
My mind is blown. Go on.
Which is obviously representative of the triple goddess. Again, very pagan. Not
very, really. Very pagan. I've just made this connection in my head that, you know, that the Christians have their version of the triple goddess in the form of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, that's where that came from. That is literally where that came
from. They just changed the sex.
Yes, exactly.
Those Christians just can't deal with their women.
But yeah, that in it's maiden, mother, and crone. And you know, if you're really deep into pagan mysticism, there is a fourth, but you don't really want to mess with her.
Who's the fourth?
I'm actually not going to say it on air, if that's all right.
All right.
But yeah, that is basically what I saw Three Ships originally was about. And again, it's been adapted, and somebody rather liked the idea that Jesus Christ as a small child was brought across by his mother fleeing persecution.
Yeah. Forget Egypt. They came to Britain.
Yes. And then another person, this is again where it gets really, really out there, is that people have suggested, people such as the people who wrote Holy Blood and Holy Grail, for example, that actually it wasn't anything to do with Mary, as in the mother of Jesus Christ. It was actually to do with Jesus Christ's wife and their unborn child.
Oh.
Fleeing persecution.
Right.
I won't go into that because, A, I'd probably upset a lot of people, and B, we just don't have that much time to do it. there's compelling evidence in both camps, but this is something that happened 2,000 years ago, so you can't really be sure either way. But I think it's interesting to look at the carol in that light, as in somebody took the original idea of the triple goddess, you know, coming in and we're celebrating the rebirth of the sun, etc., and then said, oh, we could be talking about this miraculous child coming across with his mother and becoming part of the pagan tradition in Britain. or someone else goes, we could be talking about his wife, you know, the wife nobody really acknowledges he actually had, and the children he had fleeing persecution after his death.
Yeah.
So there you go. The songs, they never really mean quite what you think they do.
It really is interesting. I love this time of year, and I love the traditions. And I think we should probably... I just said, I think. I think we should probably mention some of the food imagery that we get in carols as well.
Yep.
And in songs. So we tend... There tends to be an association of spices.
Yes.
Which comes with carols. Again, very, very practical reason why. First of all, things probably... You were very limited on what you could eat at that point. So you were going to have to rely on things which were hardier, things which would survive, things which could be frozen and salted.
Yeah, or pickled or preserved.
And therefore you also had to flavour things... and of course, if you could afford to, then you would flavour these things with strong flavours, possibly A, to mask a little bit of decay, possibly.
Possibly.
But also, actually, I wonder whether there wasn't another practical reason, which was that everybody kind of would have been a bit sniffly. You can't taste as well in winter, so you need stronger... That's me just throwing that out there as a theory. There's no backing behind that at all, but I certainly find that as we get into the winter months and I have a perpetual cold, I rather like being able to actually taste my food.
Yeah, there is that. What carols were you thinking of?
Well, they've all gone out of my head.
Because the only one that's popped into my head... I mean, I thought when you said it, I was like, yeah, there is. And I'm thinking, which ones? Because I genuinely can't remember. I'd say when shepherds watch their flocks, but that's a little bit underdone, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the sheep are still on the hillside. Even I don't like lamb that rare.
I was just thinking, wait, where's the food in Wesha? Have I forgotten a whole
there
verse?
Were sheep there.
And you were talking about sheep. That's a little bit different.
That's what I thought. And then I thought, well, there's Good King Wences.
Yes.
Bring me flesh and bring me wine.
Yeah. Also something else, which is that when I'm talking about carols, you know, it's worth mentioning modern Christmas songs as well. And that's kind of actually where I'm drawing it from a little bit, because modern Christmas songs are carols. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, they've obviously moved away from the religious element.
Yeah, except that I still feel like there are some which still have very strong links with the religious element in the way that, you know, certain imagery is used. But you also still get that pagan element coming in as well in certain songs. Obviously, I'm not talking about, you know, last Christmas I gave you my heart. Not quite so much that one.
But that is kind of about sex.
Yeah, it is about sex. Yeah, all the modern ones are about sex. We've gone back to our roots.
I told you, there's nothing new. It's just a big circle. We keep going around.
Nothing new at all. Christmas is a very sexy season, though. I mean, every year hospitals are like, please, please stop having sex at Christmas. We cannot bear it when it comes to September and everyone is giving birth. Everybody is giving birth.
I wonder what it is, because it can't just be the woolly jumpers.
You and your jumpers. I think it's possibly to do with, you know, it's cold and dark and you don't have a lot to do, so you snuggle up in bed and then one thing leads to another and 9 months later there's a child. You know, it could be to do with that. It could also be to do with the fact that you're cold and feeling a bit miserable, so you drink and that warms you up and makes you feel merry, and then you're very merry, and then you snuggle up in bed, and then one thing leads to another, and then 9 months later it's a child. Or it could be to do with, you know, I could go on, but basically, yeah, it could be to do with all these fertility songs which keep going around where people, you know, are singing carols and then like, oh, I'm feeling a bit randy. Yeah. And then 9 months later, maybe that's what it is. We don't know. Maybe carols are actually spells which cause people to have sex. Yeah. Wait till the Pope hears about this.
Well, quite a few of them actually do suggest you drink. And excessively. And I'm going to talk about two. One of them is God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, which again sounds very staid and quite Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But it was actually started life as a drinking song. And during the late 17th, early 18th century, people would go from tavern to tavern at Christmas singing this song and asking for ale. So it's kind of like carol singing, but you got paid in alcohol.
Excellent. Great.
And then there's Here We Come A-Wassailing. I know I've talked about wassailing before. Wassailing's something that happens during sort of Halloween sort of time as well. There is apple wassailing, which happens at Halloween or along the border country and in Hereford, Herefordshire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sort of the southern counties where there are great big apple orchards. Traditionally, you used to fire arrows into the trees. Nowadays, if you still do it, you discharge 12-bore shotguns into the trees. And you pour a libation of cider onto the apple tree roots and ask for a bountiful harvest of apples in order to make cider the following year. So again, we have drink, we have sex and death and everything. That's just at Halloween. But wassailing also happened at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And for Here We Come A-Wassailing, amongst the leaves so green, Wassail, wassail all over the town. Our toast is white, our ale is brown. So it's all about bread and beer.
Yeah.
This is actually about a traditional Christmas drink known as wassail or lamb's wool, which is made from ale, nutmeg, sugar, toast, and roasted crabs or apples. I think they mean roasted crab apples, not actual crabs.
Crabs. As in, no, roast not the crabs.
Roast the crustaceans. Can you imagine putting crustacean in beer? I bet someone's tried it.
Someone probably. Some hippie. They're but, like, yeah.
the excellent last verse gets to the point. Basically, it goes through, you're there with your beer, this really strong stuff, because spices actually make it even stronger, particularly if you've warmed it. So it hits your bloodstream even faster than it was before. And you're there with your beer and you toast the local cows and the horses and the sheep. And then you get to the last verse and the verse goes, "Be here any maids, I suppose here be some. Sure they will not let young men stand on the cold stone. Sing hey, O maids, come troll back the pin. And the fairest maid in the house, let us all in." So once again, after you've had a skinful of beer... It's time for sex.
Time for some sexy time. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about wassailing and mention a crazy Welsh dead horse thing. But before we get to crazy Welsh dead horse thing, I found some carols which have explicitly got food in them, and I knew I there were some. So so first of all, there's one which is called Fum Fum Fum, and it's actually a Catalan carol from the 16th or 17th century. And fum means smoke in Catalan. But basically the song is literally all about sweets.
Huh.
It says, "We go first to church and then we have the sweetest buns and candy. Fum, 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 fum. God will send us days of feasting. Fum, fum, fum. God will send us days of feasting. Fum, fum, fum." And on it goes. So there we go, sweets. All right, sweetmeats and things like that have long been associated with Christmas too. Also because, yeah, it was a time of, I think another reason sweets are so strongly associated with Christmas probably comes from the Shakespearean time, where you would get a treat, obviously, and something which you might be treated to was something with sugar in it, because sugar was expensive. So if you were going to celebrate, you might give your children sweetmeats. So something sweet. So that might be where it comes from. That's just my theory. Second one, and this is an English one, and it's from the 15th century. Now, check this out. It's called the Boar's Head Carol.
Yeah.
Okay. And it celebrates our tradition of slaughtering a sacrificial boar and bringing its head to a Yuletide feast. Okay, and the lyrics literally go, "The boar's head in hand bring I, bedecked with bays and rosemary. I pray you, my masters, be merry, quod estis in convivo, as many as are in the feast." Oh God, some of this is in Latin, so I'm not going to read the Latin part. "The boar's head I offer, giving praise to the Lord. The boar's head, as I understand, is the rarest dish in all this land. Which thus bedecked with gay garland, let us serve with a song."
Yeah, see, that's very pagan, isn't it? Because of the whole, the sacrifice of the boar, for a start.
The sacrifice of the boar, bays and rosemary, you know, I'm sure we could probably link it all back to things. The garland as well, it's bedecked with a garland. Like, wow, that's not Christian.
No, it's kind of like the boar's head is like a special guest at the feast, the one that gets eaten. And that's really pagan.
Yeah. We've got a French one as well called Bring a Torch, Jeannette. And it was first published in 1553. And because it's French, that must mean it's about food. And it says it's mostly about two girls and their quest to tell the townspeople that Christ has been born. And then they go and celebrate. Who is that knocking on the door? Who is it knocking like that? Open up, we've arranged on a platter lovely cakes that we have brought here. So there we go, more about cakes. In fact, sorry, I found another Catalan one as well. The Catalans and the French just seem to love singing about cakes. We also have the Cherry Tree Carol too.
I was going to talk about that because I quite like the story behind that one.
Well, go on.
It's part of the Bible, but the Apocrypha part of the Bible, so it's not technically in there. But there is a tradition, I think that it started probably with Catholicism, of portraying Joseph as this elderly cuckold, because Mary was, he allegedly did not father Jesus Christ. Again, we're not going to get into that. We're not going to go holy grail on this. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that they're fleeing to Egypt because Herod is slaughtering all the firstborn sons of a certain age. And she quite fancies some dates, and she's obviously heavily pregnant. And her elderly husband either won't reach them or can't because he's old. The tradition is that he's in a bit of a jealous sulk because he didn't get his wife pregnant.
Yep.
Again, this is quite a weird sort of medieval Catholic type viewpoint. And then the child allegedly speaks within his mother's womb and asks the cherry tree to bow down and give its fruit to his mother. And it plays into the whole sort of cherries being a fertility symbol thing. So it's a weird mixture of sort of pagan fertility rite and sort of apocryphal biblical story. And it's just bizarre, but it's yet another one of sort of like, well, you know, even if you've got something that to be genuinely narked about, you should still be kind of giving your wife fruit, nudge nudge, wink wink, because this is the season for it.
Yeah. Time to what do they say in Firefly? Time to plough the field or something. Yes. Like that. Sow your seed. Right, okay, well, we don't have that much long left, so I think it's time to talk about crazy Welsh dead horse thing.
Yes, you were referring to the Mari Clwyd.
Yeah. So for those who haven't witnessed or heard of this phenomenon, it basically involves a horse skull on a stick.
This is going to sound nuts to everyone in America, you realise that?
So nuts! It sounds nuts to me, okay? And I'm in the United Kingdom. So it involves a horse skull on a stick, dressed up. Sometimes they give it like fake little eyes and stuff like that. And basically, a bunch of people will go around with this horse skull. It's to do with wassailing. So they go from house to house. It's kind of very Halloweenish, actually. They go from house to house with this dead horse skull on a stick, singing, and you have to let them in, and you have to let them drink. You have to ply them with drink.
Yes. you're right. It is a bit like Halloween, where your people go around having done some weird stuff with their clothes or costumes, and you're supposed to give them soul cakes.
Yeah, exactly. But instead, it's an actual skull on a stick, dressed up.
Can you imagine that sort of knock, 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 knock? All you can hear is people singing outside. It's like, oh, carol singers, how lovely! And this horse skull on a stick gets thrust into your face.
Don't open the door, otherwise we have to give them something to drink. But I think there's like a rule that if you don't let them in, or you don't answer the door quick enough, or something like that, they'll do something. I don't know what they do. I think, you know, there are laws now protecting those people. But it's actually kind of menacing.
It's semi-terrifying and also a bit... I think it's kind of cool as well. I mean, Mari Clwyd actually means grey mare. Mm-hmm. And that sort of feeds into the whole the Celtic tradition of the Etts. Mm-hmm. You have the white mare of the south, and it's a South Welsh custom generally. Although there are hooded animal customs around the rest of the UK as well.
Yeah.
And it plays into the whole idea of midwinter being a time for ghosts and spirits and being visited, and also in the winter custom of charity to those less fortunate than yourself. So we talked about Good King Wenceslas, and there's obviously the Feast of Stephen, otherwise known as Boxing Day. I found out recently Boxing Day actually means that was the day when the charity boxes for the poor were opened and their contents distributed. It's not actually about fighting with your family like I thought it was. fisticuffs. You've had enough of each other.
Wait, was that actually genuinely what you thought that it was about? As in, like, right, now the boxing match begins.
I had about a sort of 60% inclination in that direction, but, you know, I wasn't always a big lover of Christmas, in my defence. I was kind of like, no, I just want to be left alone to read my books. It never came to blows, I'd like to point out. but yeah, the whole idea of, I mean, the whole idea of charity at Midwinter must be absolutely ancient, because it's this idea of not everyone's going to make it through, and the Midwinter will already take the old, the sick, and probably the very young as well. So we should be giving each other the absolute minimum to live on so that more of us can survive the winter.
Yeah.
And, we've talked before about how the whole Midwinter Festival type thing is kind of this huge, not just family, but as a race, bonding thing.
Yeah.
Whereby we all try and look after each other. I mean, we might be a bit sort of like, oh, screw you the rest of the year, but Christmas is the time when you all dig in together.
It's an interesting time of year in that sense. And I think the prevailing thing about Christmas is that even if Christianity wasn't a thing, if Christianity had never come about, I think there would always be a festival of some kind at this time of year.
Yeah.
Especially in countries which feel the cold, you would always have some sort of festival. And even in places like Japan, where they don't really celebrate Christmas, they have a huge New Year. New Year is celebrated very, very strongly. And I think it is to do with our need to come together as much as possible. And I quite like that. I also like the fact that, putting aside the whole kind of consumerism part of it, which is a huge element, I used to live in the Middle East. I lived in the Middle East for most of my life. And I tell you what, if you want Christmas decorations, like, you're not going to find any better Christmas decorations than in Dubai and in Abu Dhabi, where they just go so over the top. Like, I saw bigger Christmas trees in Abu Dhabi and Dubai than I ever did in England. Like, proper bedecked. Everything was just, like, just totally over the top. All of the imagery, you know, it was fantastic and jolly, and you'd have the Christmas music, and, you know, these are nations where the majority of people are there are Muslim, but Christmas has got this such a lovely association to it. And again, let's put aside the consumerism side, let's not be bitter, let's just look at the positive and say that actually there's this really lovely association which I think can be felt by all, regardless of why you're celebrating it. You know, whether you're celebrating it because it is the birth of Christ, or whether you're celebrating it because it's something which is important to you and your family, it doesn't really matter. It's just a wonderful time of year, and I do feel very strongly that it's an intrinsic part of our society, and it will be a tradition which prevails regardless of what happens.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think that we have now run out of time.
Yes, having proved that all Christmas carols are actually about sex, death, and drinking.
Which are all the best things in life, apart from the death part. Death.
You didn't think that one through.
just sex and drinking, okay, guys?
So it's time for our Dissecting Dragons recommendation this week. And Madeline? Do you have one? Do you know what? I think we should recommend a film that absolutely encapsulates this, the whole idea of coming together and not being a complete lone wolf at Christmas, and charity, etc. And we should recommend The Muppets Christmas Carol.
I highly agree. Yes. Okay, this isn't a new one. This is a golden oldie. The Muppets Christmas Carol is probably one of the best renditions of a Christmas carol that I've ever seen.
It's better than Dickens' book, actually, in fairness, because it cuts out the creepy, squeaky stuff.
Yeah, and you also get a sense that actually Scrooge isn't just doing it because he's frightened. He genuinely has found the heart and the feel of Christmas. So with that in mind, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening. Go watch The Muppets Christmas Carol. And we'll speak to you guys just before New Year.
Yeah. Merry Christmas and cool Yule.
Merry Christmas and cool Yule to you too. See ya.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note that no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.